Hello, and welcome to another episode of Roots and Hoots, a podcast project produced by the Legacy of Hope Foundation. Since 2020, we have been gathering, laughing, learning hard truths, and sharing in community conversations with Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island. Each episode, we learn something new, and we're excited to be sharing this journey with you. Roots and Hoots is about connecting with and celebrating Indigenous peoples' contributions to their fields of study, work, and cultures. We also speak with allies who share how they are furthering the work of reconciliation in Canada. To learn more about the Legacy of Hope Foundation and the work that we do, please visit legacyofhope.ca.
In episode 50 of Roots and Hoots, host Gordon Spence sits down with Anishinaabe vocalist, songwriter, producer, and TikToker Natasha Fisher. Natasha shares about her artist's journey. From being a Nighthawk in Thunder Bay to studying for her degree in social work and now living in Toronto, Natasha has always found music to be an outlet, a comfort, and a tool for self-expression. You may know Natasha from her TikTok videos, where she shares music, funny videos, while also being an advocate for Indigenous rights and furthering reconciliation in Canada. Natasha is so down-to-earth and generous in sharing about her sobriety and healing journey, and we learned so much from her perspective. Please enjoy this episode of Roots and Hoots with Natasha Fisher.
You seem to be on the rise, rising star. We were listening to a bit of your stuff earlier on, and it's very interesting. I really enjoy it, and even some of your little video quirks. They're so funny, you know.
Thank you. You have
a real character going on there.
They tried to dim that down in school, but it clearly came out.
Don't. More of that stuff, you know?
More of the crazy?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I also really enjoyed your music that you did with Ernest Monias.
Oh, yeah, the cover of If I Wanted You Girl.
Yes, If I Wanted You Girl. One of my favorites, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you at this birthday celebration?
No, I wasn't, but I actually happened to be featured on the Global newscast. About it. There's a whole segment on Ernest Munoz and his 75th birthday, and they showed him my song on TV, and he was like, "Oh, where's she from?" It was really cool to see that he could. I wanted to be able to show him somehow, and I didn't know how to reach out. I don't really know his family or anything, but we know his music all the way to Northern Ontario, all the way across Canada. You know, everyone knows who Ernest Munoz is. So being able to see that live and not be in the room was such a honor and a privilege, because I wasn't sure how I could get the song to him in the first place, and then being able to watch the live reaction over my phone was really, really incredible.
Yeah, I thought he said when they asked him how he felt about it, didn't he say, as long as you get it right or something like that?
Yeah, he said it. If you could do a song better than me, then
And I like your version. It's good. It's always good to hear different people's versions of a song, you know, than some other artists have created. So,
and you I know like what I always version. Think? I always think like a good song is a good song.
Yeah.
So however you do it, if somebody changes it, if somebody changes the tempo, like the vibe of it, but if it's a good song, it's a good song. And
of course,
for me, is a good song. So no matter how you sing it, it's going to come across as a good song.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Natasha, where you originate from and where you grew up, and a little bit about your background.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Natasha Fisher, and I was born and raised in Thunder Bay, Ontario. But my mom is first generation Canadian from Finland. And my dad is Anishinaabe from a community called Long Lac 58, about 3.5 hours northeast of Thunder Bay. So after my dad attended residential school, and him and a lot of his siblings attended residential school or were in the 60s scoop. So a lot of his siblings and his family ended up in Thunder Bay. due to being in care and being in residential school. So we ended up, a lot of my family ended up growing up and living in Thunder Bay.
Yeah, yeah. That's, so you're Ojibwe?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I've been to Thunder Bay. It's a nice, very beautiful city, I think. It's had its troubles recently with young people disappearing and, you know, and dying on in the city here. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's kind of tarnished the city, but it is a really nice city. I mean, I visited last summer. I went to do some work with my wife on a project she's working on and collaborating with another film artist. And we stayed in Thunder Bay for a few days and found it to be a very beautiful place. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
some of the longest days in Canada, you know?
I know. When I made my move from Thunder Bay to Toronto, I missed a lot of those beautiful things. I missed the long days. I didn't realize what a privilege it is to have sun till 11 p.m. It makes you a little bit of a night hawk, but you know, at least you have the sun there, and it's, you know, and also I missed the fresh air, the fact that there are so many Indigenous people in Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
Like there's a very high population of Indigenous people. And when I moved to Toronto, I really missed that. Right. And I also missed the connection to, you know, the land. There's trees, there's bodies of water everywhere. There's, you know, like I said, fresh air, all of those things. You can see the stars, like all of those things just connect you to the land. And I feel like when I made my move from Thunder Bay to Toronto, those are some of the things that I miss, and I still miss every day.
Right. So you live in Toronto full time, and I was just going to ask you that. You're a step ahead of me today.
Ayaya songs are about our histories. Ayaya is an Inuit-owned firm that tells our stories in many languages across Canada. They are experts in publishing children's books, usually in syllabics, and they also do large multi-language projects like the reports of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Commission. If you need help getting your stories into classrooms or homes in Cree, Inuktitut, or other Indigenous languages, check them out at ayaya.ca. That's ayaya.ca.
Let's see now. You've said that your music is a way to honor your Indigenous heritage, from the drum samples down to the lyrics. Is there a particular song that stands out that has special meaning to you about this healing?
Like in my own catalog, I created this song. My first song that I ever put out was a song called Lie to Me, and it features a singer by the name of Nimki. And he's now in a group called Nimki and the Ninis, and they've been playing around, and they're a very, very talented drum group. And when I first put out that song, it was my first kind of entrance into the world of music. I had never put out anything before. And I was like, how can I do this in a way that honors who I am and shows people who I am right out of the get-go, right out of the gate? I wanted to honor where I come from, who I am, what makes me who I am, and honor my ancestors in a way. So what I did was I worked with my producer, and I said, can we add some samples in here from, you know, Indigenous sounds, drums, vocals? And so we sat down together and we made this song. And after the chorus hits, there's this like really fun electronic breakdown, and you hear the drums and the traditional vocal, and it's just a sample, but it's kind of what I wanted out the get-go, is to, you know, have that be a part of me on this journey. Yeah. And since then, I've done a few of those things since, but I feel like just where I was at the time, moving away from my hometown, moving to somewhere bigger, I just wanted a piece of me. And I play that song at every live show. And when I play that song, I always say where I am, who I come from, and what makes me who I am. And it's an opportunity to share that with people, yeah, no matter where I go.
Mm-hmm. The special song. Are you working on anything new right now, like a new album?
Yes, I'm working on a lot of things right now. Well, for the last little while, I've been doing TikTok and social media stuff. But my real love is music, and that's like what has brought me out of a lot of things and what keeps me grounded. And my basically like my first love is music. And right now I'm working on an album. I've been applying for grants all last year because despite music being something that you can do for free, sometimes it can get expensive to create music at the, you know, a quality of the artists that are on the radio. But what is comes in handy is grants. So I've been applying for music grants, and I've been applying for programs that fund artists, and I'm hoping to get this grant. Actually, I think I'm going to get the news in like a week or so. But yeah, I've been working on, I have 12 songs ready to go. I need to get them mixed and mastered, which is basically just the editing phase of it. And then I'm going to start monthly releases in the summer and, mm-hmm. you know, just create really good content around it, create things that are honest and real to me. And the songs are basically just a glimpse of who I am and who I am now, because I think I haven't been really releasing too many things over the last few years, and I've gone through some drastic changes in my life. So I want these songs to be a representation of that.
Yeah. You're a singer. You're also a songwriter. How did, like, and I noticed that with some artists more recently have been incorporating more traditional sounds to their music. I think Errol Randall is one that on his last album, I think it's called The Last Ride, he incorporates some traditional sounds to his music, which is pretty awesome. It's kind of a way to me anyway, you know, when people hear that, they kind of almost instantly know that this is a native artist producing the song. How did you start in the music business? Did you when you were young, was it just something that, were you singing to yourself? Did this come naturally, or did you have to really, really work at it? And of course, artists always have to work at their craft. But how did you begin your music career?
From a young age, like, my dad played music all the time in my home. Like, all the time there was music playing. Still to this day, when I go home, he's got his 60s, 70s pop oldies playing, like, on his Bluetooth speaker. He never doesn't have a Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah.
So I think that was a huge part of my childhood growing up. And then I think just as a person, it just connected with me. Music connected with me. It was something that kept me comfort. I remember, like, when I went to my auntie's house and I was sick or something, she said I would just be like in the living room, like on the couch, just singing to myself, like as a child.
Yeah.
So from a very young age, it was something that was an emotional outlet. It was something that I used to keep me comforted and keep me safe.
Yeah.
And it was a way that I used to express my feelings, because growing up, now as an adult, like, I look back and I think, like, oh, maybe I wasn't the best at expressing my feelings through words, and I wasn't good at articulating how I was feeling at the time. But when I would feel those things, I'd notice, like, I had this computer room in my house, and I would go and put on like karaoke versions of stuff on YouTube, and I would just sing for hours when I was young. Yeah. Yeah. And it was something that I would do to just pass the time, keep me company, bring me joy, like, make me change my emotional state. So from a very young age, I noticed that was something that I could use to comfort me and keep me safe.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I could see you, you know, singing along wherever you may be, and people do that, right? They sing in the shower, or they sing, you know, as they're walking somewhere by themselves, and It's a way of comfort, I think, you know, like you said, it brings comfort to a person. Like, I guess maybe that's where songs come from, right? Why they're created, right? It comes from people's moods and, you know, and loneliness and happiness and, you know, and discovering things, you know, so. Songwriting is a powerful tool for healing and recovery. What is something you wish more people knew about the power of art as a tool for healing, or the power of singing or music?
Oh man, that's a really
talked about yourself, you know, when you're feeling down and out, or when you're not, you know, you need something to lift you up, right?
Yeah. That's a big question, because art as a form of healing is such a broad statement, right? Because when we think of art as a form of healing, a lot of the time we think, okay, let's stick to the basics. Let's make a song. Let's draw a picture. Let's whatever, like something that's tangible. Like, you think of art like that. But I think of art as a form of healing as like anything that makes you feel happy. Like, even going for a walk and like taking a picture of your walk on the scenery, like that is a form of healing. That is art. Being present and in the moment, those are all things that art does. They ground you, they keep you present. Even indulging in other people's art, for example, like listening to music, reading a book, like there are certain things that keep you in the moment, keep you listening, keep you happy, can alter your mood without the use of substances or other things. Because for me, like, the power of healing and art is so impactful and so important to my life, because I am a recovering alcoholic and I'm a recovering addict. So for me, when I was in some of my darkest times, writing, journaling, writing poetry has kept me alive, right, to be frank, and has kept me grounded and has kept me where I am now and has brought me out of dark places. Because when I was unable to make art because of my current state, I was always thinking about ways that I could make art. And it's kind of brought me out of dark times and kept me motivated to keep going, and has also helped me get some of my awful thoughts and feelings out into tangible things, and has helped me, you know, better journal, better write, better express my emotions in ways that aren't words.
Yeah, that's quite awesome to say, and for you to tell us about your addictions and stuff like that. And I think that's a really powerful tool you can use as a message to young people who are, you know, going through difficult times in their lives. I've read that you're also did a bit of traveling to indigenous communities with some artists, a collective group called Reach for Life. Mm-hmm. That you were a part of. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that went?
Yeah. So in my early 20s, I was kind of lost. I didn't know what I was doing. I was still wanting to be an artist and a musician, but I was like, where do I do with this? And I was super broke. I was sitting in my basement apartment in Toronto, and I had like $5 to my name, and I was like, what am I doing here? Like, where's my goal? What is happening? And like, I just like cried out. I was like, please, I need something, like, show me a sign. And no less than like an hour later, my cousin calls me on the phone, and he's like, Natasha, his name's Classic Roots. He's like such a funny guy. He goes, Natasha, you want a job? I was like, yes, I'll do anything. I'll do anything, please. I need a job so badly. So then he tells me about this group, and his friend Stallone Kwikwish was starting this group, and it was called Breach for Life Tour. And his goal, because he's from Round Lake First Nation, and his goal was to hit all the communities in Northern Ontario that he felt that a lot of artists and a lot of creatives never went to, and a place that he felt that the youth needed some support. So I was like, okay, sure, I'm in. Like, what do I have to do? And he's like, you have to public speak and you have to do music workshops. And I was like, okay, I'll do the music workshops. I don't know about the public speaking part though. So then I got brought up on this tour and I started to speak. And the first few times I was just a total dud. Just went off, and like 2 minutes later, I just ran off the stage and handed my mic to somewhere. A few times I cried trying to talk. Like, I just was all over the place, but it really taught me a lot of things touring with this group of people. We ended up going to over 25 different communities altogether.
Oh, wow.
And we did music workshops, we did mental health workshops, and doing things like that, like, really brought me down to earth, really connected me back with culture, connected me back with community. And the fact that I got to do it with my family and my cousin was surreal. And it actually gave me a lot of the tools that I use today, like my public speaking tools. I didn't have those before this Reach for Life tour. And I really learned from the other teammates. We have Dreesus, who is a Cree Anishinaabe rapper from Calgary area. And then we had Classic Roots, who is a techno DJ. We have J-Mac, who is also a DJ and a producer. He produces hip hop beats. And then we also have me, who's an Anishinaabe singer songwriter. So we had a really wide group of people. And then Stallone Kwikwish, who was the one who brought us all together. He was more of the traditional side. He played traditional flutes. He's told traditional stories. And I think it's a really great program. And we still meet up and we still tour today. And actually next month, we're heading over to Wemiji in northern Quebec to do some music workshops. We do songwriting stuff, healing through music. And now, like, where I am in my life, I give so much more with where I am as a healed person. I'm also finishing my degree in social work. Yeah. And now I can give so much more when I go up to these communities, and my story has changed and my story is altered. But I'm so grateful for that first opportunity, because I don't think I'd be where I am today without being brought on to that amazing group of people.
Yeah, incredible journey. I think you're just beginning your journey. And being with this group of people was kind of like a growth spurt for you. And you speak really well, so I don't think you're ever going to have a problem with public speaking in the future. So,
trust me, I crashed and burned lots.
Yeah, well, you were learning, right? You were just...
I was learning. They were like, here's, go, you have 15 minutes. I was like, what? 15 minutes? No.
Ayaya songs are about our histories. Ayaya is an Inuit-owned firm that tells our stories in many languages across Canada. They are experts in publishing children's books, usually in syllabics, and they also do large multi-language projects like the reports of the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Commission. If you need help getting your stories into classrooms or homes in Cree, Inuktitut, or other Indigenous languages, check them out at ayaya.ca. That's ayaya.ca.
But yeah,
I guess that would be like the one of the difficulties of being in the music business is, you know, you really have to speak to your group, you have to speak to your audience, you have to speak to your fans, you have to speak to media and other people that are interested in what you do. What is the hardest part of being a musician, and aside from finding work and that sort of stuff? What do you think was the most challenging part of being in your business?
Oh, the hardest part right now with the changing business that we're in is having to wear so many hats.
Yeah.
Right now, we're not just musicians. You have to be a musician. You have to be a content creator. You have to be a videographer. You have to be a public speaker. You have to wear all of these different hats, video editor, like you name it. And musicians are doing it, and people now are, you know, there's less of a collaborative effort, I think, in music, and people are now producing, writing, and recording all their own stuff. And I think that that's what makes it the most difficult, is because, you know, I really like the collaboration of music, like working with different producers, working with different people on things, but it's the other things that are difficult. Getting people to actually hear your music, making thoughtful content behind your songs. It's all possible. And it's all possible. And we can all do it with our iPhones and our smartphones. Like, we have all the tools, but it does take a lot of time and it does take a lot of effort. And, you know, I think there's a difference between making art for fun. Like, you can create songs and create art for fun and for yourself and for your friends and your family, or you can create art that you want everyone to hear. And I think that that's where the difference is in how much time and effort you have to spend on things, and maybe money. But like I said, like, there's grants, especially grants for Indigenous artists. Those are possible. And that's what we share when we go up north as well, that that these things can be a lot of work, but they can also just be a lot of fun.
Right. In your industry, well, as an artist and as a musician, and the traveling you've done and the people that you've met, I imagine that there's a lot of emerging musicians and actresses and actors and that in the whole arts field, right? Especially when you I was watching part of the Academy Awards, and some of the Robbie Robertson and his music was there, you know, and this lady who was nominated for an Academy Award. And people, there's so many talented people. I know a few myself that are, you know, that 10 years ago, you know, you barely knew anybody that was in the music business or a singer. Now I can, you know, I can name a handful of people that I know that are, and you're a new one now that I can say I know. Yeah. The guys are Fisher, you know. How do you feel about that? You feel the same? You see many new people, indigenous people in the music business and in the arts field?
Yeah, I mean, representation matters, right? And when I was growing up, I didn't see many indigenous representations on screen or, you know, whatever, on TV or in music. Like, and I think now indigenous people getting the recognition that they deserve, being able to enter these spaces. And it's just, I find it inspiring as a fellow artist and creative and musician. Like last night I watched the Oscars, and they had a whole section of live performance for the Osage singers, drummers, dancers.
Yeah.
And it was powerful to see our people represented on screen like that. Like,
yeah.
They for a long time we were denied our existence.
Right.
And these are things that we were unallowed to practice. We weren't allowed to practice these things. And now it's being showcased on national television to like a billion people. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And I think that it's inspiring to the next generation of youth and next generation of children, next generation of adults that never had their chance to be in those rooms, thought that they never had their chance to be in those rooms. And even it's inspiring to adults, like write that book. You know, write that screenplay, go audition for that role, go release that song. Like there's now so many options. And Lily Gladstone is a 37-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Too. Like she's not a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
She got to this place right now and she's 37 years old. Like I think a lot of the times too in our industries, like it's like, okay, you're not 25 anymore. Like maybe you should do something else. But she stuck it out and look where she is now. So I think this is a barrier in breaking, you know, cultural barriers right now. Like we're now showcased on national television. And this is also it's like lacking barriers in age. Like just go out and achieve your dreams regardless of who you are and where you come from.
Yeah.
And like you can create that space for you.
It takes a long time to unless, you know, you luck out somehow earlier in your career as a musician and as a musical artist, for many, it takes many years and you don't actually achieve success until late 30s, 40s, 50s sometimes, you know? And it's a craft that takes years to develop. And I always remember L. Randall when, you know, Seaweed, he was talking about his first album. I think they just produced their first album and they were interviewing him. And they said, when we finished, I realized that we'd just come out of the forest to see an ocean we still had to cross. So it was that kind of tells you, like, you know, and he has been around for quite a long time and, you know, and he's still doing the music thing. And yeah, Lily Blackstone was a lady. I was trying to remember her name. She's an incredible, incredible talented indigenous artist. And there are many, many other artists that are emerging, and I really like the scene that you talked about at the Academy Awards, where where they're kind of, they're all like, there's kind of like the sunset background there. That was so powerful.
Yeah,
that was so beautiful, you know, and I just, it made me really proud.
I know, me too. Scene. It made me emotional. Yeah. I was like tearing up in my seat. It's just awesome to see, man.
Yeah. Social media, you know, it has a lot of influence on the business, especially music and the number of people it reaches nowadays. How much influence do you think it has on it being kind of an educational tool about Indigenous people, reaching out to non-Indigenous people?
I think it's a fantastic tool because you're hearing stories and you're hearing real life experiences from the mouths of Indigenous people. I think that that's the best thing. Like, you can watch a segment on the news, you can watch, you know, something, but when you're hearing it from the perspective of an Indigenous person sharing, just, you know, just like I'm talking to you right now, like, I think that that's an important perspective to have. And I think that, I think in 2020 or in 2021 or something, Indigenous content was the highest watched content on TikTok in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah. So that means that not just Indigenous people were watching Indigenous content. That means that non-Indigenous people from across Canada were watching Indigenous content. You have content creators like Indigenous Batty, who is from a northern community, who does informational videos and who does education stuff, and who also dances in her regalia. And then you have people like Notorious Cree, who also does the same thing. And these are these are community members from their communities who are on social media sharing their perspectives, sharing their stories, and they now have massive followings. I think Notorious Cree has like 4.2 million followers on TikTok.
That's
a lot of people. And this, and the other person I'm talking about, the Indigenous Batty, she has hundreds of thousands of, if not a million followers on TikTok. Like, these are people that have created their own space on social media and have had people come back to their channel. If you think about it, like, if you think about it, like television, how people have watched TV and it's like, oh, that got a million views across Canada, you know, like that used to be a thing. These people have millions of views just on their own personal channel, which is crazy. The impact that you can make and the stories you can share and the education you can bring to non-Indigenous people while having that kind of following. And that is something that I look up to. And that is something that I look for when I'm watching and scrolling on TikTok, is these people that are making a positive impact, because I think that it's important for Indigenous people to see and be inspired, but also for non-Indigenous people to listen and learn.
Double the Love with Canada Helps Make It Monthly campaign. This month, begin a new monthly donation of $20 or more to the Legacy of Hope Foundation through Canada Helps, and Canada Helps will match it with an extra $20. Your generosity knows no bounds. Please consider creating a new monthly gift of $20 or more through Canada Helps to support the Legacy of Hope Foundation. Your donation will help us achieve our goals and make a big impact across Canada. Please visit legacyofhope.ca/donate/ or simply visit this episode's show notes to find the relevant links as well. From all of us here at the Legacy of Hope Foundation, thank you so much for your support.
Do you think that historically, Indigenous culture in Canada, the United States, has been very much suppressed to the non-Indigenous population? Do you think that because it's wide open now, we have different forms of media, do you think that has a lot to do with suddenly there's this great interest in Indigenous people and Indigenous music? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that for sure it's kind of a tricky question, right? Because a lot of these things too, like, we were not believed because the media, the people in charge, the government, whatever it may be, denied us that secondary, yes, that happened, you know? So it was basically us who were labeled as criminals, like the savage, like in quotes, like
There are many
And
names.
yeah, many names. And that was what we were labeled, and that's who these people were supposed to believe.
Yeah.
Like it's an awful time in history. And I remember you know, my dad telling me stories about what happened in residential school and telling me all of these, you know, awful things, and the fact that people just didn't know. And I think genuinely some people just didn't know.
Right.
And then when the news broke about the mass graves, I think that it sparked some controversy.
Yeah.
And people started to look at it and go, wait a second, are you serious? Because a lot of people just didn't know.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, and I think it just happened to be at a time where TikTok was at, like, was rising and at a high where you could hear everyone's unique perspectives. And I think that those two things together just created this mass awareness,
right?
Which was beneficial in so many ways.
Yeah, kind of like a turning point.
I believe it was a turning point.
Yeah, yeah. Even to Indigenous people, that was kind of woke everybody up, you know. Finding these mass graves. It certainly made me wonder about, you know, the residential school I went to. Were there graves? Were some of my friends buried there? Or, you know, and I think it sparked, like you said, it sparked a lot of interest. And because in terms of non-Indigenous people knowing and understanding Indigenous culture, it was controlled for the longest time until, you know, we started having things like the internet and more media outlets coming out and more availability of real knowledge about Indigenous people. So it was a turning point in creating a better understanding of Indigenous people. I just wanted to mention before we close out, we're coming to the end here. Don't you find some of these drum groups? I just love listening to them. My wife loves listening to the drumming too, and especially when there's women singing in the background.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
so beautiful. and I just love some of the names, you know. they're so creative in the names that they come up with, and I don't know, I mean, offhand I don't have any, but there's so many of them, and those guys, I mean, those drummers are incredible. They're, you know, to be able to sing the way they do, and it's a unique form of singing, and not anybody can do it, right? So So I wanted to end this, as we always do, we end our podcast by asking our guests about reconciliation, and it's part of what we do here at Legacy Hope Foundation. We try to create a better understanding about Indigenous culture to non-Indigenous people across Canada. And it's our small part that we play in providing information to the public about Indigenous people. And the buzzword recently has been about, the word has been reconciliation. And everybody seems to have a different view on it. And they're all, to me, right, you know. There's no wrong answer to it. And I was wondering, what are your thoughts on reconciliation and, you know, that word alone and what it means to you?
Yeah, so reconciliation, when I think of that, I think of a lot of different things. And one of them being like reparations, which some have already been happening, some have already been taking place. You know, reconciliation comes with healing for both parties, I believe. And for me, I think of land back. And land back, not meaning just strictly like give us the land back, by meaning like give Indigenous people spaces within these communities, like to heal and grow, like more Indigenous businesses, more Indigenous funding, more Indigenous representation, which we've already seen happening, and all of these things together, because it's a tricky thing, right? We're all still healing. We're all still recovering. Some of us are reconnecting. For me personally, I'm reconnecting to art forms, traditional art forms. And that's been a part of my recovery and a part of my healing journey, is reclaiming that because of what my dad wasn't allowed to do and what my grandmother wasn't allowed to do. And, you know, reconnecting in those forms and then being able to pass those on to my children. And all of that, just healing is where I'm at right now, you know, encouraging healing, encouraging sobriety, encouraging the red road. That's where my heart's at, because all of us are hurt in some way or form from generational trauma and from what happened in the past. But I believe that after these turning points, after these, you know, truthful moments, is now an opportunity for us to grow and to heal and to come together, to unify. And I believe that that's all part of reconciliation.
Very well said. Awesome, awesome words, Natasha. And I thank you. I want to thank you on behalf of the Legacy Hope Foundation for taking the time to be on our podcast, Roots to Boots. I've been talking to Natasha Fisher. She's a young Indigenous, a singer, a songwriter, creator, very talented young lady, inspiration and a rising star. And we look forward to hearing more about her and her music in the future. Thank you. Thank you, Natasha, for being here.
Chimiguach, thank you so much for having me.
Miigwech.
Roots and Hoots is a podcast project produced by the Legacy of Hope Foundation. For episode show notes, please visit the podcast description and make sure to like, subscribe, and leave a review. For more information about the work we do, please visit legacyofhope.ca.